Session number 24610, room 13.
Mr. Guest, reel 13. Now, what happened next then, after you'd sort of passed through, about the 20th of April?
Well, can I backtrack just a little bit? On the night previous to being handed over, we were issued, I think, with three bottles of beer by the Chinese, and I drank one of them, and I hung on to the other two, and we'd got... say a couple of blankets and some bits and pieces, and I actually walked across the Bridge of Freedom with these bottles of beer about my person. Anyway, we went through the delousing operation, and then a quick listen to our chest by the doctors to make sure that we were fit enough to travel. And I was actually talking to an Air Force intelligence officer, and I gave him one of my bottles of beer, and somebody else had the other one. So I only drank one bottle of Chinese beer, but it wasn't bad. I did have one bottle of beer prior to that, and that was at Christmas in Pyeongtaek, but that was just the one bottle. Anyway, we were walked over then to a landing strip, and we were ferried to Seoul Hospital by helicopter. I had the doubtful privilege of sitting in the hold of this helicopter, and the noise was something indescribable. I mean, you couldn't even hear yourself shout. There's myself and a chap named Les Manley, he came from Camp 5, and two senior American officers. Anyway, we landed in not far from Seoul Hospital, and we were packed into seated ambulances, shall I say, and driven to Seoul, where we were taken into a ward and assigned a bed space, and we had various medical checks, and the following we slept there over.
How were your wounds, or rather the only one that's really bad?
No, I was walking wounded. My wounds were healed, although I did have problems with them after I came out of the army. But we stayed in Seoul Hospital overnight. Then we were taken out to an airstrip, got on board a Dakota, and we flew to an airfield in Japan at Iwakuni, Iwakuni. From Iwakuni, we went to Kure. We spent about a week, I suppose, in Kure Hospital. This was to really assess our state of health, and if we were fit to fly home, and also to give us various injections that were deemed necessary. Dental checks, X-rays, a general once over. So we spent about a week in Kure Hospital, and then we were taken back to Iwakuni, and we were only allowed It was decided that we were only allowed to fly by day, so I think we had one night in the small hospital in Iwakuni, and the following day we went on to the airfield, and we flew out in a Hastings to Manila to Clarkefield's aerodrome. Whilst we were on the, well, you can't call it the tarmac because it was all pier steel tracking for the landing field, there was about a couple of dozen of us, I suppose. One of them was George Hodkinson, and he was actually conferred with the DCM for outstanding courage in the field on the hook when Johnny's overran them. He was a wireless operator, and he radioed back the situation to headquarters until eventually he was seized and incarcerated. Anyway, we got on the plane and we flew over to Japan. No, sorry. We flew to Manila.
That's where you said that the...
With the Clarkefield Aerodrome, yeah.
Yeah, he'd already got there, yeah. That's where he said he got his medal.
No, we got the medal at Iwakuni Airfield. And then after he got his medal, we got on the Hastings and we flew to Clarkefield Aerodrome in Manila. I don't know how long it was. It was a daytime flight. It was fairly long. And we did the flight in hops because, as I say, we were only flying during daylight hours. We stayed the night at Clarkefield Aerodrome. We had a meal in the evening, which was quite something because American catering is quite lavish. We got up in the morning. We had eggs, bacon, sausage, tomato, pancakes if we wanted them, and endless supplies of coffee and bits and pieces like this. I think we had ice cream the night before. Then on again from Manila, we went to Singapore to Changi Hospital. And whilst we stayed overnight in Changi Hospital, them, of course, still monitoring our condition of health. And whilst I was in there, a few beds away from me was a guy named Johnny Biggs. He was being flown home on our plane, although he was actually serving with the Air Force in Singapore. And he'd injured his leg. He'd broken his leg in two places whilst playing football. And in the climate, in the humid climate out there, his leg was showing great reluctance to heal. So it was decided to ship him home, and we'd got a spare bunk on our plane, so he came back with us. I actually went to school with him, so it was quite a reunion really. First, Lieutenant that I'd met since joining the army. From Singapore, we went to Colombo. From Colombo to Karachi. In Karachi, we were put up in a hospital in the hills. It was an extremely pleasant place. And I think it was there I was given a pineapple, which I brought home, and eventually it got so much of a problem that when we landed in Lynham, I gave it to a couple of nurses. However, whilst we were in Karachi, we were given a couple of bottles of beer, and there were some of the lads. We were in the ward with other lads that had been hospitalised, and I said to them, I said, "This is nice beer." They said, "Yeah, it's Tennant's Lager." I said, "Can you get any more of this?" He said, "Oh yeah, you can buy cases of it." I said, "Shall we have a case and have a party tonight?" He said, "Well, I doubt it." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, it's about 18 shillings a bottle." So anyway, that got knocked on the head. From Karachi, we flew to Habaniya in Baghdad, near Baghdad, in Iraq. From Habaniya, that was an Air Force base. Habaniya means the place of the flies, but it was so well appointed that it was really an oasis in the desert. There is no doubt about that. Brilliant place. From Habaniya, we flew to Malta, and we stayed overnight in a camp in Malta near the aerodrome. And then on the last day, we flew from Malta to Lynham Aerodrome, landing about 3:30 in the afternoon to be greeted by, well, I was greeted by my mother and Thelma, who was my fiancée at the time. And we had a little bit of a chin wagging to get together, and then we were whisked to Tidworth Hospital, where we stayed overnight. And then we were given our ration cards and some money allowance and some credits, and we came home, we trained home.
So you were on leave?
I was on leave then, and I was granted leave for a month.
So you'd have got back in May 53?
Yeah, May 53, yeah.
And how did you settle back, you know, when you first got back?
Not very well, really. I was a little bit intolerant of people. So I don't know whether I got a chip on my shoulder or not. I don't know if that's the right sort of word to say, but I was quite short tempered, and I'd been thrown out of captivity into civilian life, and it was completely foreign to me, you know. It took me some time to adjust.
So you were on leave. Did you have to go back, or did they?
Yeah, I did. At the end of the month, I went back to the Royal Herbert Hospital at Woolwich for hospitalisation, and it was just after the coronation. That was in June, just after the coronation. And whilst I was waiting to cross the road in Woolwich to go to the Royal Herbert Hospital, there was a crowd of people there, and the Queen and Prince Philip passed by in their limousine within sort of touching distance. Anyway, went into the hospital. And
this is Royal Albert?
The Royal Herbert.
Herbert, right. Sorry, Miss Herbert.
Royal Herbert Hospital, yeah. I was shown into the orthopaedic ward. Because of the damage to the bone in the leg, and eventually shown to my bed space, etc., etc. Told the rules of the hospital, shall I say, and got into sort of general hospital life. A couple of days after I got there, it was surgeon's orders or whatever. And the surgeon came round, he was a captain. I went into his office and he talked to me about my wounds and what I was expecting. And he examined me and noted that the right leg was 1.5 inches shorter than the left. I got a gutter scar, and at that time I had a hole in the, still got a hole through the femur. Where it hadn't healed, it was gradually calcining over and forming a callus on the bone, but there was still a hole through it. And he asked me what I was expecting of him, and I said, "Well, I was hoping that you might, take some bone from the other part of my body and lengthen the leg and do some bone grafts and that sort of thing." And he said, "No," he said, "we might have been able to do that." If, you know, within a sort of fortnight you're being wounded, they said, but the time has gone on so far, and your muscles in your leg are now shortened and become accustomed to your leg as it is. The only thing I can offer in by way of compensation is a built-up shoe. So obviously I had to accept this. I went to what's the street of famous doctors in the
Harley
Street. Oh yeah, I went to Harley Street to a surgical shoe specialist, and he measured me up and told me that they would be about 3 weeks to a month before I got them, and I saw the surgeon next day, and he'd got the notes from the manufacturer, And he said, right, he said, I think we might as well demob you, discharge you from the army, and you can sit at home and wait for wait for your shoes. And I said, well, I'd rather stay on in the army if you don't mind. So he said, why is that? He said, you must like the army. I said, no. I said, I'm making arrangements to get married. I would rather wait in the army, but 2 or 3 weeks leave would be very welcome whilst I'm making my preparations. Then hopefully I would get my built up shoe and everything would be sort of cut and dried and finished with. So anyway, this is what happened. I was granted a month's leave. I'd been having physiotherapy and I'd been given certain exercises to do.
What type of physiotherapy?
Knee flexing and toe touching, rotation of the ankle and all that sort of thing. General mobilisation of the leg, really.
Did it work?
Yeah, it's worked, yeah. I'm still not... I still haven't got full flexibility of the leg. The knee will bend, but when it gets about 25, the lower leg gets about 25 degrees from the upper leg, when I'm bending, that's as far as it goes. It will not, I could not kneel down and sit on my heels, as it were.
So you got married?
Yeah, I got married in 12th September, and I think I was actually discharged at the end of October, at the beginning of November, I had a letter through the post for me to attend the Hospital of Tropical Diseases at Roehampton. I went there and I had various tests. I was looked at through every orifice in the body, and it was discovered that I was suffering from roundworm. This was brought about by eating probably green raw vegetables that had been manured by human excreta, and the eggs had got onto the vegetables somehow, and they'd been transferred to my stomach. I had treatment for this, which was very severe, extremely severe. I was given an injection which made me very, very ill for a few hours. And then for a week I was on an ounce of Epsom salts a day and a dessert spoonful of castor oil night and morning. And this had a very relaxing effect on my body, I can assure you. Anyway, eventually I did pass these two worms. I only had the two. One was 19 and a half inches long and the other one was 23 and a half. And it was a bit traumatic to see them, because we had to pass motion in a bedpan so that everything was collected. And when I saw these things sort of half wriggling about in a stupefied state, it rather upset me a bit, but however, that was done.
Now, when were you able to get back to work, so, you know, to building trade?
I think I'd already, during that month that I was on leave, my brother was working in a gang of bricklayers, subcontractors, and I actually put a couple of weeks in the August before to get a bit more money for the wedding, and then I came out in October. I came out at the end of. I got married in September. When I came back from honeymoon, I started work again, and then when I eventually got discharged, Then I was well into laying bricks again, working with my brother.
So and that's where your career was, basically, in the building trade.
Yeah, that's where it was. Yeah.
And you stuck. Your leg injury didn't affect you.
Not too much, no, not until the following January. And then I had a flare-up, and I had an extremely high swelling of the leg. And the doctor came, my doctor came round and had a look at it. And he made arrangements, and I went into Luton and Dunstable Hospital. And they actually opened the leg up again and removed some fragments of bone and some odd bits of osteomyelitis. They were cauterized, and then I was sewn up again. And I think I had about a month in the hospital at that time.
Did it flare up again after that, or was that?
No.
Now what? Did you get a pension for your?
Yeah, I did. I did get a pension. I got a 30% pension at the time. But in latter years, I'm partially deaf, and my pension's actually now been raised up to 50%.
And what about the mental effects? Did that? I mean, you know, you said you had trouble when you first got out.
Yeah.
Leave. How long did it last for you?
Oh, it lasted for quite some time.
Was it of your POW experiences, or what you'd gone through in the fighting?
I think what I'd gone through in the fighting, because I used to wake up after very bad dreams about the fighting and that sort of thing, you know. Incidentally, when I got discharged, I had the discharge papers through, and they were obviously written by a faceless member of the forces, and it got my name, my rank, and number, and etc. And it got medically discharged, and it at the bottom it says reason for the discharge of Corporal Guess, and it says failing to fulfil military physical requirements. Which was left a bit of a nasty taste in my mouth, and I'm afraid I should have kept the paper on it, but I'm afraid I ripped it up and threw it away in my disgust, because I thought there was not a word about being wounded. There wasn't a word about being disabled, or there wasn't a word about being a prisoner of war. Just that I was a failure to fulfil military physical requirements, and I thought that was a real letdown as far as the army was concerned. I've never pursued it, but perhaps I should have done it at the time. However, that's in the past now, and best forgotten.
Now, you're a member of some regimental associations, why are they important? Which ones are you a member of? The Korean Veterans?
Yeah, British Korean Veterans Association, yes.
And why is that important to you?
Well, it's a get-together of all the old comrades, and I was approached, actually, by a chap in Norwich, goes under the name of Dickie Bird. He was the secretary of Norwich branch of the BKVA, and he said he'd been given my name and understood that I was a prisoner of war, and would I be prepared to write about my experiences as a prisoner, and hence the pamphlet that I've now got,
which is now in our Department of Documents.
Which is in your Department of Documents. That's
well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was only intended originally to be just a few pages for their newsletter, but obviously it grew a little bit and came into about 6,000 words, and it was serialised and went through two newsletters.
And you attend their meetings?
And no, I don't attend their meetings. And I was invited to go to Wellingborough by an old Norfolk man who had got to know my name. They had a reunion there, and he got chatting to me, and I found out that there was a Bedfordshire branch of the British Korean Veterans Association, and so I joined them. And I've been a member for a number of years now.
Now, there's another thing. I mean, you haven't mentioned him in your interview because, of course, he didn't find him, but there was a reunion with Tony Towle who'd been sent to look for
him. Oh, yes, yes.
Tell us that story.
Well, this was about 2 years ago. It was another Wellingborough dinner dance reunion. And the chap who organised it, Harry Minard, he rang me up and said, you know, you are coming. I said, yeah. He said, I think I've got Tony Towle coming down. He said he was the officer. I said, yeah, I know who he was. I said, he was the officer who was in the third stage of the patrol, who came up to find us when we'd got hit. And but it was all to no avail because the officer was dead and I was taken prisoner. And anyway, we had quite a reunion at the meeting, and I shook his hand. I said, well, Tony, I said, you came looking for me. I said, but it took you about 44 years to do it, you know, at the time. And we exchanged stories. And from then on, I think when you interviewed him, and he mentioned my name. And I also know Keith Nutter, who was the radio operator with Tony Towle, whilst they were coming looking for me, and he got mentioned in dispatches for the action that he took during that time.
And you're a member of the Royal Norfolk Veterans Association?
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're
no,
not. So it's
no.
The British Korean Veterans.
British Korean Veterans, yeah. I do get a correspondence from the Royal Norfolk Regiment, but I mean, bearing in mind that their dinners and reunions are in Norwich, it's not really convenient for me to travel from here to Norwich for a bite to eat and a couple of pints and then, you know, travel all the way back again. So, no, there's not a great deal of connection with them.
Thank you very much.